people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars, coming to you from Atlanta, Georgia, recording in Strongbox West as usual. Around the table we have...
Ben.
Bodie.
Becca.
And I'm Mickey. Thanks, as always, for joining us. I'm going to jump right into our agenda on the board, or should I do Grand Trivia Auto first, do you think?
Let's do trivia.
Let's do trivia first? All right. Our Grand Trivia Auto question for the day is, first produced in 1928, which car displayed a logo that included an image of a Spanish conquistador? Was it Cortez, DeSoto, Cordoba, or Geronimo? Think about that for a minute, and we'll hit it again at the end of the show. Let me repeat the question.
I got it.
You got it?
Yeah.
Ben probably knows the answer already.
I'm just giggling over our car. What would you do with a car named Geronimo?
Geronimo?
I'm thinking that's exactly what
there
I was thinking.
There you go, Thelma Louise, that thing.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Because you just drive them off cliffs.
Should I repeat the question? Are you guys good? You got the question?
I think I'm good.
You can repeat it 100 times, and it's still going to be a guess in the end for me.
Okay. All right, then. Let's move on with the show. I wrote up there on our board Mazda update, and you guys have to see this picture, which we will post online when this episode publishes. Ben, I think, has already seen this.
Yeah, well, that's something.
Yeah. I'm going to show that to Bodie, get it up close, and look at it. So what they're looking at is a picture of something that happened to me while I was driving my Mazda around 285 the other day. And I heard, around 70 miles an hour, I heard this thing go clunk, and the steering got a little wonky, so I slowed down and pulled over to the slow lane and took it easy. And a little while later, so there are two things going on in that picture that most people... one is obvious and the other one's not so obvious.
Has somebody recently worked on this? Did somebody...
That's the before picture. So what happened was...
No, I'm saying, did somebody leave a bolt off? How the...
That's
bolt
what...
came off. That's yeah. why it's like that.
Yeah. Well, I know, but normally they're torqued down and torque yeah. specs would not let it just come off.
So what we're looking at is a broken axle and a tie rod, and that has been completely disconnected. And this is an extremely dangerous situation.
Very huge.
Very dangerous situation. Mm-hmm. And if my steering had actually, if something had, you know, it really happened at speed and the wheel went wonky at speed, I would not be here today. But what happened was I was able to actually pull over. And just as I came around the corner of the exit that I took trying to get off the on-ramp, the front passenger side wheel was no longer in line with the rest of the car. It did sort of a 90-degree shift. And so here I am dragging a tire trying to get to the side of the road. And the thing that puzzles me about this break is not when it happened, but that we've known for a long time that the boots on this car have been torn. And only the driver's side one was making any noise. And it was only kind of rattling, right? There was no loud clunking. There was no huge grinding noises or anything like that coming from the passenger side at all, which is what puzzles me because it's the side that broke.
By, you know, public service announcement, those boots are really important. So,
Yeah. Now, and I was waiting for more catastrophic, you know, grinding or something to come out the front end before I actually replaced both axles.
Well, but you had a guardian angel or something looking out over you that you're safe with that. But don't wait until some big, I don't know, ugly, scary thing comes screaming at you going, hey, there's a problem.
Now, wait a minute. We've discussed this before. We've discussed this in the show before that a torn boot isn't necessarily grounds for immediate axle replacement.
Well, I wouldn't say immediate axle replacement. By inspection of the part that it's protecting, because even a tiny little thing, and then you get moisture, and then it's a domino effect, some more quickly than others.
What do you think, Ben?
Well, yeah, it's I think yeah we did cover this before. It's usually not a super immediate situation. Yes, it's cumulative. It builds on itself, but it's not usually a right now problem.
Well, not a right now replace the axle. It could be a quickly replace the boot.
If you can, you can't always.
Yeah, and some axles they're not replaceable. So like a Honda Civics, they're a sealed unit. If you have a torn CV boot, in order to fix that CV joint, you have to replace the entire thing.
Well, that's stupid.
Mm-hmm. You can always, you know, squirt more grease in there until you get the chance to do the proper job.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
But in this case, as we can see in the picture, the boot's just gone.
Yeah. yes. If this were a human, this would be one of the worst compound fractures that I had seen.
I've limped along vehicles thousands of miles with a clicking CV.
Oh, yeah.
CV joint. And I've had the same thing happen to you, and I continued to drive that vehicle all the way across town.
Wow.
To get to where I needed to be to fix it. But you got to be real careful with how you accelerate, because if you accelerate, that wheel wants to go out or in, and if you brake hard or at all, the opposite happens. And as long as you keep a real steady on it. Now, if your axle breaks like yours did, well, then you're going to just, all your power is going to go to that broken axle, and you're not going to be able to go anywhere.
Right.
I had the tie rod end fall off, but I still had the axles intact. So I've done a lot of dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
But he was on the highway, and Atlanta does a lot of highway driving, and the highway speeds, that just, yeah.
I got really lucky, I admit it. I did get really, really lucky on that. But again, the part that puzzles me is that I never heard that side of the car make any noise whatsoever. The other side was clicking and grumbling the entire time.
Well, it's possible the steering failure may have brought on the axle failure, too.
Yep, that's what I was thinking. Because what looks to me like happened, that bolt came off of your tie rod, or I'm sorry, the nut came off your tie rod. Your tie rod flopped out. And whenever that happened, your wheel turned too hard and it broke your axle. Mm-hmm. So,
don't you hate it when it goes floppy?
I hate it.
God.
That's our Becca. All right, so let's see what else we have on the board today. Ben, how about a quick Lotus update?
All right, well, not as big as the last update, obviously, but one of the things, I can't remember if I told everybody, I've got the windscreen back in. That was a major job, although not the way I thought it would be. Yeah, this is one of these old-fashioned kind that's, you know, stuck in a rubber seal, as opposed to being glued on like the modern types. Of course, the original glass I wanted to preserve because it has some historic stickers on it. It's got a Lotus factory quality sticker on it, which I'm sure is everybody's favorite joke. And it also had a 1971 British registration sticker on it. So I didn't want to give this glass up, especially because the new one is about $800, you know, shipped from England.
Mm-hmm. Could you bake them off and reuse them?
Probably not.
Just a heat gun?
No, that would destroy them.
Well, no, I'm not saying set them on fire or anything.
You mean steam them off?
No, you like if you want to save a wine bottle label, you put the wine bottle in an oven, not at a very high temperature, but you're basically drying out any adhesive left, and it starts to peel off.
Well, this is old UV cooked plastic that's been there for 50 years. So no, the whole point was I didn't want to destroy the glass because these would go to
that. I wasn't saying that he should destroy it. I'm just thinking. Right. Although, side note, send a picture of them. Take a picture of them and either post it or send it. I've just got something in the back of my brain. Sorry.
It just occurs to me that we do these Lotus updates, but we don't actually put many of them up on the TTAC page.
No,
you can do that.
And I had complained about that once before. I don't know how many people had watched the YouTube video I did for the first episode, but I had little pictures popping up during the video, and I had a hard time finding too much with the Lotus.
I will rectify that. Excellent. So anyway, the glass was a bit of a job. And actually, getting the seal lined up on the body is not that difficult, but you want to cram as much rubber onto the edge as you can because it will shrink over time. And if you don't really cram a lot of rubber in, then when it shrinks, you'll line up with a gap. And of course, everybody's snickering and giggling here, but
we're all 12.
That's my dirty mind. I'm in the gutter.
But what Bodie may not know is that you're doing essentially a frame off restoration of.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, not frame off.
Not frame off?
No. Frame is staying on the car.
Okay. I thought
probably
you removed the body
off,
panels.
No, that,
It probably doesn't come off, does it?
Yeah, it can. I'm just not doing it this time. Maybe in a couple of years I'll do that. Right now I'm just working on a functional job, getting everything running. And
I thought you took the whole thing apart.
No.
Okay.
No, I just took all the interior out.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I would say, suspension. Compared to most shade tree things like this, you've torn her down. It's more extensive than most people do on their own. So.
Yeah, I didn't take any of the powertrain apart because most of that had been done by a previous owner, although it still leaks quite a lot. But right back to the glass, you get the rubber onto the edge of the body, then the glass pops on, and this part is easy because there's a plastic strip that inserts into the seal that kind of locks the whole thing together. Without that strip, the seal's pretty flexible. You can work the edge around onto the glass, either a plastic body tool or even some old credit cards. And plenty of soapy water, and it just all pops right in. But then getting that lock strip in is the tough part. There's a special tool for that. Without that special tool, it's hopeless.
So you need to lube it up a little bit before you can.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Get it in there.
Even with that special
soapy
tool.
Water.
Yeah.
Soapy water.
I used some special rubber lube when I did it. But even with that tool, I found it was extremely difficult to get the strip in place. But it's done, and I looked at it, and I went, yeah!
Well, no, the hardest things, you feel like King Kong once you've finally got it fixed. It's
yeah.
awesome.
I thought the strip would be easy, and getting the glass into the seal would be the tough part.
And the other way around.
Yeah, and now the rear window is going to be a whole different challenge. It works the same way, but the rear one has some corners where you actually have to miter the rubber seal just right to make it all come together smoothly.
Very cool.
Yeah, and then I've got some new mirrors stuck on the doors now.
I saw those.
Yeah, the original one was a sporty little one, just one on the driver's side. It was down low and close to the body and in a spot where it was absolutely useless.
So why did Lotus choose to put it there, and what are you going to do with the old holes now that you're not using them?
Well, the old holes are going to be visible. I'll plug them with something so that, you know, the water can't get in the door, but they're going to be visible unless I do a, you know, repaint, which is probably not going to happen. Mm. For various reasons. So yeah, I got mirrors on, got the glass in. Oh, there was something else I can't remember, but yeah, it's constantly in progress.
Sure.
And yeah, more things coming.
Can't wait to see it on the road.
Me
either.
Definitely.
Bodie, you wrote up on the board, why are modern trucks so nice?
I'm looking for answers from you guys, because I can't figure it out.
Yeah. They used to be workhorses, and now they're luxury.
They're
practically
soccer mom vehicles.
Nice cells.
Nice cells. That's right.
But man, I look at, you know, I don't want to get into financials or anything, but I do okay, right? And there is no way I would ever shell out $70,000 for a truck.
Or keep going.
And what really drives me nuts is, you see a big diesel, mm-hmm. and they got the stack sticking out of the bed. Mm-hmm. Right? I saw one about a couple weeks ago, and it was beautiful, nice new Dodge Ram, and with the Cummins diesel, jacked up, and it had the regular short bed, so 6'4", yeah. and had a toolbox in that bed, and it had these massive stacks sticking out of the bed, which pushed the toolbox back even further,
right.
which effectively made that six and a third foot bed only about 3.5 feet deep. So you know that they're not taking advantage of being able to haul a lot with that
right.
big 2500 series truck.
Just because of the stacks.
And so you look, you go, well, maybe they're using it for towing.
Yeah.
All he had was a simple tow hitch on there that's probably only rated for about 6,000 pounds. And I just, for
Which
the life
nothing.
Of me, can't get it. Why would you pay that? You know, that was a $65,000-$70,000 truck.
Oh, yeah.
And why?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, he's not hauling anything with it. And clearly, he's not towing anything with it.
Maybe he's
also
hauling ass in it.
Yeah. Getting 8 gallons to eight gallons to the mile.
Right,
eight miles per gallon.
Yeah.
But on the one hand, if somebody wants a really nice truck, go for it. The lack of cheap basic ones available now is a little concerning.
Yeah, can't even get. I mean, like the Toyota Tacoma is probably the smallest thing out there. Possibly that new Ford Ranger.
Yeah,
but all of them, for one, you can't find them completely base unless you special order.
Right.
And, dude, they're almost $30,000.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Absolutely absurd, and it just boggles my mind.
I did drive a really nice truck a couple weeks ago. One of my business trips, the rental car place, I think they must have been low on cars that day or something. They said, oh, would you mind taking this Ram truck we've got? It's pretty nice. I said, hey, if it'll get me where I'm going, fine. And it was this Ram Laramie. It was a four-door cab, but not as big as four-door cabs come. And my God, it was luxurious. It was really nice. Had all kinds of gadgets.
Trucks were made for working. So yeah, I think.
And
that's
you know
of
what?
Point.
Somebody
yeah.
who rented it before me did work with it, because I looked in the bed and it was all scraped up. But the cab sure was nice. I mean, this thing had, you know, heated and vented seats where air conditioning blows through the seats, and it had more speeds than other cars. Most have high and low. This had high, low, and medium. Had USB sockets everywhere, had more compartments and cubbies to put things in, Wow, it was comfy.
Well, it
was
makes
sweet.
Me wonder if, you know, if fleet vehicle sales are selling these trucks, or if fleet vehicles are a watered down version of those trucks.
Good question. I haven't looked at a fleet truck in a while.
Well, you can still get. Well, this is as of 2018, and possibly when, with Ram, they're doing that. They're selling it's a 2019 model, but it's the classic. So it's the same body style as the year before. I don't know if you can get it with the brand new trucks, but the old ones, the fleet vehicles, you could still get with roll up and down windows, manual crank windows, and things like that. But they're just hard to find. And if you're getting that, then you're getting literally a fleet vehicle. And so there's no other option besides white.
And larger fleet buyers, you know, because they've got so much volume buying power, can specify things too. Like I remember in the early 2000s, I worked for this large company that had a whole lot of, they were big international, multinational, global company with fleets everywhere on earth. And in the United States, none of the trucks had cruise control. It was a standard item on the truck if you bought it as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
But the company said, don't put this in our fleet vehicles because that'll, over the size of the fleet, that'll save us about $2 million a year on insurance.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Wow.
Although I do have to bring up, though, if I could have afforded it before I got the Liberty, I would have been all over that Raptor.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a Raptor Baja. I don't even know if I want to see what a specialty edition of a specialty edition of a higher edition. Because it's basically the Ford F-150 to the SVT team.
Yep.
And then you add the Raptor, and then it's the Baja edition. God, they're gorgeous.
So this is like the Russian doll of special editions.
Yes.
Well, it makes me wonder who the actual customer is for those trucks.
Well, I've never seen a Baja on the road, but I see Raptors all over the place. I took a picture of one pretty one yesterday. Oh, yeah. It just gorgeous trucks, and I'm not generally a truck person, but if I could have afforded one of those. Ah, love them.
So I'm remembering a thing that Ben told me, or Ben commented on a Facebook post, and I saw this beautiful black truck with, I can't remember what kind of minigun was mounted in the bed.
Oh boy.
And it was just one of those, you know, road fantasy things. And Ben's
Mad
like,
Max?
Huh? No, not Mad Max. It was all modern and slick and everything. It was a toy, basically. And it might even have been a Photoshop, but Ben's comment to this beautiful looking large truck with the minigun and mounted in the back was, sorry about your penis. So
you have to look at a lot of those trucks and wonder.
Well, and that, I mean, I don't want to be that guy, right? But it's like, you're clearly looking at a population that's buying trucks not for the truck.
Correct. Yeah.
So why then are they buying them?
Well, you just hit it. I think you said called it a toy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what used to be exclusively the vehicle, the off-road vehicle at least, toy was exclusively a Jeep, because there's really nothing that a Jeep can do there's nothing that a Jeep can do that sets it apart from either a car or SUV,
mm-hmm.
you know, something like that. You know, they're strictly a toy, and if you want to drive that and have fun off-road and stuff, that's cool, and that's what these people are doing with trucks. They've become toys, and they're on top of that become so luxurious that they're actually excellent road vehicles.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Excellent road vehicles. And I just,
but it makes me wonder though, if your purpose is to be on the road and go from city to city and you're not hauling anything, why would you buy the truck instead of, I don't know, a sedan or even a small SUV?
Right. Yeah. And that's what I'm stuck on too. But I guess if you can only have one vehicle and you need something and you want that toy, you know, then that's what you're going to get. And you're going to get, you know, 12 miles to the gallon.
Well, personal sense of style being one, but also I think a lot of folks out there really misperceive their own needs.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. I have a good buddy that has a Tundra.
Oh, yeah.
And it is excellent. It is so nice. And he owns it, and he's like, she's a pavement princess.
Yeah.
And he has no, I mean, he's taken off road a couple times, but that's it. He polishes.
Like a lot of us can envision what we think we're going to do, and then the reality is we don't.
Oh, well, I do. Well, no, I've
Becca
turned
can
it
turn
into
anything
a
into an off-road vehicle.
I wouldn't do that to my other girls. It's that right. I'm leaving that up to the Jeep. But part of the idea behind it was, we call it jamping. Jeep camping. Hmm. And we've already done that. I'm not even done with the whole setup. So no, that was half the idea. We're not sleeping in a tent where bears are actually a thing here, by the way. we're all safe and locked up, but we're camping out in the Jeep.
Well, this is a perfect segue to the next thing on the board, which is...
That's what I was thinking. That was perfect segue.
Traction control. Is it good for off-road playing around?
Depends on the traction control system.
Yeah, and I have never, at the same time, tested my traction control and my 4x4 abilities.
So you mean, not all traction control is programmed equally?
That is correct.
That is correct.
Some is designed for off-road and some is not.
Okay.
And some of it is quite excellent. It's amazing and everything. But what I find is what traction control is doing is it's taking a lesser driver and making them more capable. It's not making the vehicle more capable in most situations. Where that does differ is the traction control, where it's not just limiting the RPMs of the motor, but it's actually applying brakes to the vehicle's wheel or tire that is spinning to get it to stop spinning and pass the power over to the other side. Now, that's a different kind of traction control, and it literally makes the vehicle more capable. Whereas before, to get around that, we had lockers. And we had friction differentials and things like that. And so, but as a whole, whenever you see the new Toyota Tacoma, it comes with a dig itself out type of mode. You can sink it sand.
Wow.
And it literally will move the tires back and forth until it gets sand underneath its own tires and pulls itself out. Hmm. Now, is that vehicle more capable than the same vehicle without that technology? No. You just have to be a better driver than you do if you have that technology. And again, it goes back to like the backing up. Yeah. You know, people, our machines are doing everything for us. And, you know, I can remember being stuck and I kept telling a friend of mine, Rocket.
Yep.
And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm trying to explain to him, you put it in reverse, and then at the right time, put it back in drive, and you just rock it back and forth and rock it out. And well, he ended up burning up the transmission because he did it improperly. And it's like, but that's what the new Toyota is essentially doing, is it's rocking it. Typically, what you find in like just a regular vehicle, like a sedan or something like that, it's going to be based almost exclusively off of engine RPM and tire speed. It has sensors on all the wheels, and if some of them are spinning faster than others, then it limits your RPM.
Right.
And that's your traction control in wet and snowy conditions, things like that. Yeah. But like the Subaru, I believe they were the first ones that came up with it back in the 90s. And when you have open differentials, that leads to better gas mileage.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to keep the open differentials. But, well, then how do you keep it from free spinning on a side that's in slick mud? Well, you lock up the brake on that side so that the other one is fed the power. And that's ingenious. That is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So TCS, never turn it off, at least not on the highway anyway.
My motorcycle even has it.
Wow.
Yeah, because it uses the ABS sensors. If the front wheel and the rear wheel start differing in speed, then it starts applying brake to bring them close together. The downside is you can't do a wheelie unless you turn the system off.
Right.
Yeah. On the Pontiac and my Mustangs, the ones that have come with traction control, the first thing I do is turn that off. Unless it's a day where there's rain, it can interfere with launching, I guess. If you're at a standstill, if you're trying to pull out of somewhere quickly, it messes with the back wheels, especially if you need to make a sharp turn, like if you're pulling out of somewhere quickly. So the first thing I would do...
You're whipping it around often, are you?
Actually, yes.
All right.
I don't need to wait for a nice big space. I can just pull out in that little one. And so normally, on those at least, I don't fiddle with it on the Jeep. It is what it is on the Jeep.
You need a vehicle with launch control.
Yeah. And typically, most people can get better launches with traction control than they can without it, especially if they're in a standard manual transmission.
It probably depends on your car and your driving style,
we are running out of time with this episode.
Well, wait, to go with this one, I was pulling up some porn here.
Some.
So there is a Shelby Baja Raptor.
Oh, boy.
Look at this. Oh, my God. Look at that. Is that not gorgeous?
Well, you know, Ram is putting the Hellcat engine in their competitor for the... Yeah, I know. They're putting the Hellcat engine into a Ram 1500. So
there's a little voice inside my brain that's like, yeah! And there's the rest of me that's like, why?
You know, I'll bet you if Mr. Shelby were still around, he probably would enjoy the hell out of that.
Probably. Oh, yeah,
I've actually been off-roading with him, so I think he would enjoy it.
And I don't even know, you know, praise be Carroll Shelby. You know how I feel about him. He is, yes. Well, my God, my.
Sure. Thank you for sharing that. There's a part of me that's like, oh, that's magnificent.
It's gorgeous.
In any case, our grand trivia auto question for the day was, first produced in 1928, which car displayed a logo that included an image of a Spanish conquistador? Was it Geronimo, Cordoba, DeSoto, or Cortez? Bo, do you want to take the first guess?
Well, DeSoto was Dodge, basically. I'm pretty sure it wasn't them. Cordoba was a Chrysler Cordoba, so it wasn't a manufacturer. The only guess I've got is Cortez.
Cortez. Becca?
I was bouncing back and forth between DeSoto and Cortez. Which one you went with, Cortez?
I went with Cortez. Sounds Spanish.
It then is I'll Spanish.
Just yes.
Ben, what's your answer?
I'll go with DeSoto. I'll just, you know, DeSoto? Play okay. Devil's advocate and take the opposite one from Bodie.
I'm pretty sure it's DeSoto.
You're pretty sure it's DeSoto?
Yeah.
Any reason why?
Partly hunch, partly knowing that it was actually a car brand and it goes through a lot of the 20th century.
The answer is the DeSoto division was part of the Chrysler Corporation beginning in 1928. Not only did sales of the car break the record for first year sales, but with 81,065, but this record was not outmatched until 1960 when Ford introduced its Falcon. An economic recession in 1958, as well as other factors, hurt demand and sales of the car, and the DeSoto was discontinued in 1961. So it is the DeSoto.
And Howard Cunningham drove one.
Extra trivia on the trivia.
Right.
So anyway, that is your answer for the day. It was awesome. The DeSoto. Spanish Conquistador.
And if you want to see some fabulous fins, check out the 1960 DeSotos.
Check out the fins DeSotos. On that girl.
Yeah. Ooh. Oh, yeah. The 1960 Adventurer especially was that was a gorgeous car. But because it was a late 50s Chrysler, they have all rusted away.
Well, you're right. And we're all sitting here talking about DeSoto as you know, Spanish names versus all these Native American / Indian names.
Right.
And yes. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, and Geronimo being Native American as opposed to Spanish.
All the others are Spanish names, and Geronimo's the only Native American name on the
list. Cordova, I could have gone in a couple of directions other than Spanish as far as the name.
Anyway, that's our episode of The Thing About Cars. Thanks always to our listeners for joining us. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and you can always give us your criticisms, comments, questions for new shows via our website, thethingaboutcars.com, and we really appreciate your help via our Patreon, which is patreon.com/thethingaboutcars. Your help there helps us get more gear and to improve the show. Anything else we need to say to our guests before we take off? Thanks, you guys. Be safe out there. We'll see you next week. Later.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.